This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. You're very welcome to a new season of the programme, and we'd like to hear from you as always on any of the topics we're about to cover on the programme. You can text us 51551. The email is saturday@rte.ie. On Twitter, it's @SaturdayRTE. Allow me to introduce you to our panel: Minister of State with Responsibility for Disability, Finian McGrath; Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil Spokesperson on Justice; Breed Smith, People Before Profit, AAATD; Michael O'Regan, Parliamentary Correspondent with the Irish Times; and Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Examiner. You're all very welcome. I want to start with what didn't happen last night, Michael. John Halligan, The Late Late Show. We were so looking forward to it.
I was bitterly disappointed, Claire. I tuned into The Late Late Show. Oh, great show. You know, the ploughing championships, this Endoconine, 3 months. Would you travel with him, Finian? And maybe
absolutely,
a few of your colleagues
yeah.
might travel with him. Marvellous show. Panel at the end. Very good panel, I thought. And I waited and waited. Then, of course, Ryan Troubley announced, no John Halligan. So I think what happened was this, and Finian will no doubt confirm it. I'd say Shane Ross and Finian McGrath had a chat with him. And they said, John, we've had enough. We've had enough of this. Look, please don't go on The Late Late Show and carry it further. You see, Claire, in coalition governments, a former minister told me this one time that in the 73-77 Fine Gael Labour government, and Liam Cosgrave was the Fine Gael Taoiseach, and when Labour got too exercised about issues, be they local or otherwise, Cosgrave used to look into the middle distance and say, when you take the shilling, you follow the drum. Now, Finian took the shilling with Shane and he's following the drum. What's wrong with John Halligan?
Well, first of all, can I say thank you, Michael and Claire, for that wonderful introduction to your first programme. And can I say that in relation to...
No pressure about John.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know John, for example, was very busy all week doing his job as a minister.
He was announcing
new jobs and new apprenticeships in his day job. He's getting on with his life. The Independent Alliance are totally united behind the programme for government.
Did you tell him
our
not to
job,
go on The Late Late
our
Show?
Job, absolutely no. We were talking to John a number of times during the week. We wanted to ensure... We told John the Independent Alliance is totally united about supporting John in relation to health services in Waterford, like he supports me in relation to disabilities and cystic fibrosis. That's the issue. Boxham Horden, Sean Canny, Shane Ross and myself were totally united behind him and pushing these issues. And of course we said to him we encouraged him to stay in and stick with the programme for government, and we will deliver in the end in relation to developing our health services both in Waterford and places like Beaumont Hospital as well. So the answer to your question is, Michael, absolutely. We're committed to this programme for government.
So it was his own decision not to do it.
Absolutely, 100%. John, like we're a group of independent TDs and ministers, and people make up their minds in relation to chat shows or issues like that. No, I believe he was very busy in his constituency last night in Waterford, like I was all day yesterday in Dublin Bay North.
Were you disappointed and upset when you read what he had to say in the Sunday Independent? Do you think that was unhelpful? Particularly in relation to Boxer Moran, actually, I think was one of the less reported lines, when he said, John Halligan said Boxer was an idiot for telling him to accept a watered-down package for Waterford Hospital.
Well, there was a lot of sympathy and understanding for Boxer in relation to that particular comment that was made. And in fairness to John has actually apologised to Boxer Moran. And Boxer, as you know, is a very, very dedicated, hard-working, committed TD for the Westmeath and Athlone area, and he's doing a lot of work as a government backbencher, and he hopes to be a minister in the future. So, but go back to your questions. There was a lot said in the heat of battle. We've all dealt with this issue internally, and the Independent Alliance is united around implementing the programme for government, and that's the up-to-date situation.
Breed, am I right in saying you know John quite well?
Yeah, I know him reasonably well, yeah.
How do you think he is? Is he just uncomfortable in government?
Well, he told me he's very unhappy. Yesterday I spoke to him and he said, I'm very unhappy, and it's not just this, there's lots of issues. And I'm not trying to tell stories, you know, tell tales behind his back or anything, but he did say this, and I would well understand it. In fact, I think a lot of us on the left were quite shocked that he took the position he did and go into government with Fine Gael, because it's like, you know, going into the quite opposite to where you come from. It's totally opposite to his gene pool. And I can imagine how uncomfortable he feels. I think it's a big mistake. I hope he does come out. I think it's a mistake for anyone.
Do you think he will?
I think he will eventually, yeah, I do. I think it's a matter of time. I think it's a mistake for anyone, and I would have thought the same for Finian, but I think John was much more clearly of the left and had a very concise sort of anti-capitalist approach to politics. And I was shocked to see him go into power with Fine Gael. And I think it's just natural that he finds it very uncomfortable.
It might be uncomfortable, but the politics of power is pragmatism, isn't it? You have to in some way water down your ideology if you do that. And he did make that decision knowing full well that he was going in with Fine Gael, and this would likely be the outcome.
Well, Claire, you might call it water down. I would call it totally dissipate your ideology, because he, you know, his deal was to get something for Waterford. But on the you know, on the same hand, nothing has been done about the real crisis for his constituency, which is homelessness, which is the water charges, the whole NAMA scandal. I mean, these are scandals of enormous proportion and compromises of a huge step for John Halligan to take. And I even think back on the Gregory deal with and Tony Gregory was somebody I respected hugely. He got a big deal for the inner city of Dublin in terms of housing. I know a lot of people who live in those houses, and it's a fantastic project. But in the same period, Charlie Hottie cut 8,000 beds out of the public health service, and we've never regained them. And Gregory had to support him in that. So I think independents need to be very careful about saying, I'm getting something from my own backyard, but here goes a whole load of my principles. And actually, your own backyard is also concerned about those principles. So the people in Waterford do care about the abolition of water. They do care about the dysfunctional nature of NAMA and the corruption that's going on. And they do, they're very much affected by homelessness and other issues that Halligan is cooperating with the government on.
Disagree with Breed in relation to the number of points that he made. It was a difficult decision, we all accept that. But most of the other TDs just sat on their hands and didn't get directly involved in government. If other TDs came in with their own agenda in relation to housing, homelessness, the crisis in health services, it would strengthen our hand as well. But we made the difficult decision. I am very happy that I made that decision, and I'm trying to deliver in relation to the issues that Breed talked about: reinvestment in our health services, services for people with disabilities, issues like housing, homelessness. What I'm saying to people is, give us a chance. We're only gone over 150 days in government, and we've already started that work. You saw yesterday the improvement for teachers. You'll see improvements in housing over the next couple of months. I was up in Beaumont Hospital.
So it's worth
Friday.
All the compromises that you have to make.
You have your principles, and of course you do your best to stand by your principles. But my job as an elected member of the Oireachtas is to try and deliver. And by the way, it's not about parish pump politics as well. The Independent Alliance has a national vision for this country. It's about reform. It's about changing politics. It's about being radical but responsible, but it's also about investing in public services. And that's where the Independent Alliance is united.
But the people who elected TDs. John Halligan want another cath lab in Waterford Regional Hospital.
And they are
the people who are going to elect him or not the next time. Yeah, so it is about your constituency. You know, that's what politics is in this country.
Yeah, but the bottom line, the most people in Waterford are telling John and telling us that they would like to see John to stay in to fight for the implementation of the rest of his policies. He's already, if you look at the details of what's on the table, the reinvestment and increase in service in the water hospital, he's already got 7 out of 10 related to these issues. So what I'm saying is, if he sticks in, we'll back him, because John backed me on cystic fibrosis and disabilities. We'll back him 100%, and I would be very optimistic that if that issue is revisited in the new year, there could be a chance there, a very good chance to be done. If he stays outside the tent, he's not going to be
able
to deliver.
It's never going to happen.
Do
you agree with Breed that he's very unhappy?
We're trying to implement policies.
Is he very unhappy?
John is in a space where he's come from a left background. I accept his point, Breed's point on that
Physical
issue.
Space.
But no, hold on a second now. But the bottom line is, he's happy to serve and implement the programme for government as long as the programme for government is implemented. And that's where I stand as well.
Jim O'Callaghan, I'm sure you've been watching this with interest.
Yeah, I have. I think John and the other independents are now becoming to realise that if you're an independent TD and you go into government, your political identity changes. And that's difficult. It's not a question of being left or being right. There are many advantages to being an independent TD. You don't have the baggage of a political party, you don't have to compromise your views so as they fit in exactly with the political party, and people don't prejudge you. But if you go into government, your identity changes, because what you're doing, you have to associate yourself very publicly with the political party in power. You must toe the line of the government, and what's absolutely essential in a government is that a government and all its members are collectively responsible for decisions. Now, people in Ireland are very tolerant of independent TDs and constituencies where they do great work on the ground, as I'm sure John has done. But they're not that tolerant of independent ministers when they're in government and they're deciding to act like independent TDs. I went back and had a look at the agreement that John entered into with Michael Noonan, which was on the 6th of May. It's a letter. The source of this problem appears to be that John got a conditional agreement. What the letter says is that they're committed to the development of a second cath lab in Waterford, subject to a favourable recommendation.
Okay, so he was naive. He was naive.
I'm not saying he's naive, but that's a conditional agreement. And if he was dissatisfied, if he was adamant about it, he should have tied it down at the time when he was in a position of strength. Because once you sign up to the deal, your strength fades away.
Alison, but we are sticking to the programme for government, by the way, and we're strongly committed to it.
Okay, but just on the John Halligan point, was he naive or is he being badly treated here? Because Colette Brown did a really nice comparison between John Halligan's position now and what Michael Lowry
does.
She did,
and I read it. The difference being, though, that John Halligan is in government and he made an agreement and made a decision to go into government. So therein lies the difference. To me, the real politique of the situation now is that John Halligan is a serious liability for the government, really. And is, if things continue as they have been, I mean, and I wasn't shocked that he pulled out of the Late Late when I heard it yesterday. I was shocked that he had even considered it. I mean, at this point, you wouldn't rule out a John Halligan YouTube channel. You know, he needs to sort of get real, really, with where he's at. He's in government. The man to my left, Finian McGrath, we've heard what he said over the last 5 or 10 minutes. This is someone who recognises the commitment that he's made, may not like some of the compromises, but accepts that this is where he's at and the responsibility that goes with it. There's an incongruity in being an independent that we'll never quite get over, that the decision was made to go into government and be part of that collective responsibility. I must say, personally, in my head, I think that there's that sort of contradiction you never quite get over. If you put yourself before your constituents and say, I'm an independent and that's what I'm standing for and how I want you to elect me, and then go into government, that there's a contradiction in that. But be all that as it may, I think we've seen after the week that was in it, and particularly even seeing John Halligan turning up with Enda Kenny and Richard Bruton at that Dublin Inner City School on Thursday, you got the sense that they'd kind of had the group hug, he was back on board, and that you know, things had been ironed out. And yet we now know that he was all the time possibly considering that he was going to go on the Late Late. It just looks like it's heading one way, and that they're better off, I think, kind of lancing the boil before
it. Who is the liaison between you guys, Finian, and government? Is it Regina Doherty?
You see, that was an issue that we had originally when we kind of bed down this government. And I take some of the criticisms, because some of the criticisms are valid. But we've now appointed Tony Williams. He's a full-time coordinator between the Independent Alliance and the government officials. We're now in the process in the next couple of days also of appointing a deputy government press secretary.
I saw an ad for that job, a minuscule ad in the Irish Times. It was like something somebody who was selling,
no doubt,
at a premium rate, like someone who was selling a second-hand car. You looked at it and thought, you know, how serious are they about this or what? It just struck me as odd.
We're very, very serious. Yeah. And can I tell you that I was involved in the process and also involved in the interviews over the last couple of weeks. And the standard of people applying for the job is very, very high.
Why did you need an outside person? Because Seamus Brennan did that job for Bertie Ahern very ably, where he sussed all of the partners before it reached cabinet table at all. Isn't that right? So why did you need
Tony's
to appoint...
an outside person. Tony's
a member. He's a member of the Independent Alliance. And
non-elected person is what I'm saying. Did you look at having a liaison between the Independent Alliance and Fine Gael, an elected person?
No, we didn't. We actually wanted somebody that could go directly at our behest to go in, to be free to go in every single day.
The question is, how is this only being sorted now?
Is this the crisis?
There's people trying to turn every little fight and every little row into a crisis. There's no crisis. What I'm saying to you today very clearly is, the Independent Alliance are committed to the programme for government. We're committed to stability. And if I, as I said to my own people in Dublin Bay North, and some of them have been critical in relation to the issues, if I can deliver 4 or 5 good things over the next 3 budgets, I'll be absolutely delighted with that. And I have priorities. Priorities are investment in health services, investment in disabilities, investing in
assisted
viability. Yes, and the answer question
is, why is it only happening now that you need to appoint this liaison person?
It's not a question of happening now. We had other priorities over the last number of months. We had to focus on bedding down the programme for government, and now we're focused on getting people that will help us implement
it. Really, what we're seeing here, there's a difference between the Independent Alliance. The Independent Alliance is a collection of individuals in Fairness Fianna. In fairness, it's not the same as a political party that goes into coalition with another political party. Members of the Alliance have different levels of commitment. But what they need to realise, all of them, is that you can't be a semi-detached member of a government.
Yeah,
and that's part
I
of the problem. Some people think they can be semi-detached, that they can take some of the decisions, and if they
you're
don't like other...
There's
other decisions you don't like, you say, we don't like them, we're not part of them. If you don't like decisions and they're made by the government, your remedy is you get out of the government, you resign.
I have some sympathy, actually, for John Halligan and all of this. And I think he's quite an ideological politician, and I have some sympathy, and I'll tell you why. When the deal was being done, it's well known that the independents who were talking to Fine Gael were, and indeed Fianna Fáil at one stage, but Fianna Fáil was carrying on this pretense that they would go into government.
That's unfair.
It was clear that the independents were pushing an open door. And clearly, what John Halligan got was a nod and a wink that this, that this analysis of the need for the second laboratory in Waterford, of course you'll get it. Now, what eventually he got, of course, was a wink and no nod. And I think the impression was given to him that this is a foregone conclusion. Because it's well known, Fine Gael were desperate to get into government. Fianna Fáil were anxious to humiliate them. You had this nonsense over in Trinity College where they spent hours and hours talking about water charges.
Wrong again.
Despite the fact that the big problems in Ireland, two humanitarian problems, are housing and health. Yet Fianna Fáil swanning around Trinity College trying to give the impression they were humiliating
Fine
Gael.
Again.
So I think in the negotiations for the programme for government, John Halligan was given a clear commitment that this would be
but
provided in
Waterford. But it wasn't a clear commitment. I mean, Jim has just read the letter. Do you say it was the nod without the wink or the wink without the nod?
I presume they had said to them, look, come on, John, of course you'll get this, but look, we have to have this analysis of whether this is required. And the analysis...
that would be inappropriate, Michael, because the agreement with Fianna Fáil, which is so criticised, was adamant that Fine Gael had to publish all deals entered into with other individuals going into
government.
What about
Michael Lowry then?
Well,
has this government a deal with Michael Lowry, for instance? Michael Lowry says... This requires clarification from both Fianna Fáil and the government.
Yes.
Michael Lowry says he has an understanding with this government, right? When you ask Fine Gael about it, and people like in the Independence Alliance, they look at you with dewy-eyed innocence and say, no, he has no understanding. Now, has he or has he not?
There's absolutely no deal there. And that was the first question that we asked at our first cabinet meeting. And the Fine Gael, the Taoiseach,
so he's wrong.
They categorically denied that. If Michael Lowry has other ambitions to push his agenda in Tipperary, but there's no formal deal.
Can I say this, though?
Is he an understanding?
Not that I know of, Michael.
He has described it as an understanding.
Michael, can I go
back to the point I was trying to make? In the confidence and supply agreement we entered into with Fine Gael, there was a requirement and an obligation on them to publish all deals. So if, as you're suggesting, there's some unwritten deals out there that are only known to individuals in the Independent and Alliance and Fine Gael, that would be completely inappropriate. We'll see, actually, though, when it comes to the step-aside Garda station, if that is reopened, that's nowhere written down. That'll certainly raise suspicions in my mind.
So are you saying, Michael, that there has been all sorts of promises made to independents in the course of that 70 days?
Of course there has.
That Jim doesn't know about.
Fianna Fáil and innocence don't quite gel. Neither, by the way, do Independent Alliance or Fine Gael in innocence, but nor Labour in innocence.
Michael is really pirouetting around.
You're on form today, I have to say. But, the Late Late Show crowned you last night.
Oh, yeah. You need to get out more on Fridays.
It was the National Ploughing Championship side of actually. But it's clear that informal promises, for the want of a better expression, were made to independents. There's no doubt about it. In some cases, some of the independents were almost on board, and then they pulled back. People like Matthew McGrath and Noel Grealish and that. For instance, Dr. Michael Harty in Clare, who is supporting the government, he describes this as a case-by-case basis. He's been made chairman of the Health Committee. But the interesting thing about the Michael Lowry business is he says he has an understanding. Now, if you have an understanding with the government, that's a deal.
Mm-hmm. Michael is obsessed by deals. Can I just say, there are issues, Michael. There are issues that all TDs, including Breed, if issues come up in your constituency, local issues, of course you're going to do your best to use the power that you have in government to do something about
them. So that's a deal.
Now, if you call it a deal, I call it representing my constituents, and I'm very, very proud of that.
Alison, how do you think Minister Shane Ross has been doing in the middle of this bus strike?
How do I? That's an interesting question. I suppose part of the thing
he's been
is
criticised. The union said yesterday that he just walked away from it. He'd withdrawn.
No, I mean, he's in a very difficult position in that we traditionally, or in the past, have had the situation where we had the sort of Bertie Ahern being the person who comes to mind, sort of rode in at the sort of the crucial moment and sorted it all out. And as we saw during the boom period, then that we had national agreement talks where both the government side and the union side, you know, served to spend an awful lot of the money in the national purse, which is part of the reason why we ended up where we did. Whereas we're now trying to spend a lot of money on wages, I suppose, in a new way, a way that we're not used to. There's still expectations by people of the old system coming into place, which is why Shane Ross comes under pressure. But while Shane Ross may not, as he says, come in with the national checkbook, I think there are other things that he could be doing. I would agree with that approach of not coming in and trying to solve it by spending money.
I just wonder, though, if you're
creating problems there for other sectors. But the problem for Shane, I suppose, Shane Ross, is also the summer he's had in relation to the Olympics, his trip to Rio,
nothing to do
and
with
that
it.
He's that he is
absolutely
attempting
nothing to do
that
with it.
That obviously is those sort of issues will be playing on his mind in terms of his general performance as minister and how that
he's
has been judged.
He's the Minister for Transport and Sport, and the one of the biggest and I would say the most crucial responsibility he has is public transport in this country. Now, when he talks about I'm not taking out the chequebook, people think, oh, he's not going to sign for another 6-7 million a year to pay the bus workers the 6% they're owed since 2008 and a reasonable 5% per year for the next 3 years. But what's actually happened is since 2008, the subvention to Dublin Bus, which was one of the lowest in Europe anyway for a public transport system, went from 86 million down to its current 57 point something million.
So you were
That's
saying he could increase
cut.
The subvention?
Absolutely. He could give a commitment not to cut it anymore because he has an input into the budget, and he could increase and restore the cuts that were made in the last few
years.
So
it would be another way to skin the cat?
You may call it another way to skin the cat, but Dublin Bus is subvented as a public transport company to the least when you look at the average right across Europe. If we were to subvent Dublin Bus to the European average, they'd be getting another 200 million a year, never mind the paltry 57.5 million they get. And it is the public who pay for this, because bus fares have risen by 30-odd% over the last few years, and it's the workers who are also paying.
So that increase in the subvention would go to increasing salaries rather than improving the service.
It would allow Dublin Bus the space to pay amounts to about 5 to 6 million a year over the next 3 years in increased pay. Now, remember this, bus drivers are not like vulture funds or REITs or the sort of apples that come into this country and make arrangements with government not to pay tax. They pay every penny in tax, and any increase they get in their wages, they spend in the local economy, just like nurses, teachers, drivers, workers in general. So to say that this is kind of somehow going to break the bank, opening the chequebook to bus drivers, is completely dissing his responsibility. He is the Minister for Public Transport.
This comes back.
He has to get onto the NTA.
Yeah, I want
to
hear now.
For example, the NTA last year, the National Transport Authority, took 2 million back from Dublin Bus because they were doing well. They've made profits over the last 3 years consistently.
Yeah, I heard the
NTA took 2 million back from them. Now, the minister can intervene and say, give them back that 2 million and don't cut them anymore if they're doing well. And by the way, when it comes to the budget, I'm going to insist that we restore the subvention to a decent level. Okay. You can't restore it to a decent level. As I say, the average in Europe is 200 million above what Dublin Bus
is. This dispute is going to be resolved the same way that all industrial disputes are resolved, between talks between management and unions.
Unfortunately,
we have this Mexican standoff between the two of them.
Let me speak.
I think the minister should intervene. He seems to think that his only obligation or his only role in bringing the sides together is to come with a checkbook. There's much more to being a minister than simply writing checks. He should be bringing in the management of Dublin Bus. He should be separately bringing in the leaders of the trade unions. He should be trying to put in place a mediation process, if the Workplace Relations Commission isn't working, to ensure that there are talks. And unfortunately, unfortunately.
But we're told time and again, Jim, that the Workplace Relations Commission or the Labour Court, they're the only places where that can be done, that it's not the Minister's place to do that.
There's hundreds of thousands of people in Dublin who are hugely disadvantaged by the failure of Dublin Bus to deliver a service. We have got to ensure that their interests are represented. The workers are being represented by the unions. Management are representing the company. Somebody has to speak for the passengers. And that's the obligation of Shane Ross. And I'm afraid I like Shane a lot, but he seems to be displaying the early stages of Stockholm Syndrome. I think these civil servants have got him.
I don't think so. And I think Jim is playing politics as well in relation to this particular issue. This is a very serious issue. First of all, for the bus workers, who I believe personally have a genuine case, and also the commuters, the 400,000 commuters. And one of my issues as Minister for Disabilities, I'm very concerned about the disabled people who can't get to the centres on those particular days. And it's a huge crisis for me. So I've been involved in that side of it. But to go back to the core issue, I can't understand why the company and the unions don't get in there to the WRC and resolve it. And that's what Shane Ross is saying. He's very decisive about that. It's up to them to feed. Now, we need a broader debate on what Breed is talking about. I would love to see the Transport Committee looking at the issue, because there are people in the whole political system that are looking at the privatisation. And I'd love to see our Transport Committee in the Oireachtas coming together and having a debate about investing in public transport infrastructure.
So you're saying, you've said at the start there that you support the bus drivers. So do you support their 15% pay claim?
I think they have a genuine case, and I've talked to them over the last 48 hours myself. Some of them live in my constituency. Some of them are supporters of mine. I think they have a case. But the way to resolve it, Claire, is to get in there to the WRC, sit down and hammer a deal, and no preconditions to talk. That is the way to resolve this issue, and that is Shane Ross's position as well.
OK, Alison, you want to come in there?
Well, it's the wider issue. You read things over the last few days of Pascal Donoghue speaking about the very limited amount of money that he has available in the budget. You're looking then at a 15% pay claim. If that were acceded to, where does that end up? You even bring it back to the narrative.
Look what
we
the
had
Lewis drivers
during
got.
During the general
it has been exceeded
yeah, during
already.
The general election, with the what Fine Gael were saying in terms of the promises that they were making. So it's. Again, it's like the maturity of the political conversation or not. That
look,
do we make the decision? Do we want to spend money on our health services,
I'd encourage the leadership of the trade union movement to get it. I'd make a plea to them and also to the company, sit down, hammer out a deal and best to support the workers.
Finian,
and also the
last word, Breed, go and talk to Shane Ross and tell him to get his finger out. Not the checkbook, get his finger out and do something about this. The unions are willing to go back into talks. The company are saying nothing. The NTA are saying nothing. Shane Ross is saying nothing. Now, the workers are not going out and strike for the crack. They're losing days' pay. They're struggling. And there is a serious cohort of Dublin bus drivers who are not on 40,000 a year, who are on 30, and who work all weekends, who are on a special shift and will stay on that pay rate for a long period of time.
Yes.
Is there any one of us sitting around this table that's on 30 grand and works all weekend
and
work late
tonight?
And do
you think I'm not bringing that message to
that level of sympathy for workers
Absolutely.
Has to be got across. Shane Ross is ignoring it, and Alison put her finger on it. What they're terrified of is the knock-on effect of giving the Dublin bus workers 15% plus what they're owed, which is 6%. How will that affect DART? How will that affect Irish Rail? How will that affect nurses?
But Breed,
how will that affect
logic?
Teachers?
What about the logic of that
sorry,
money?
Sorry, Alison, let
that
me finish
being,
my point. Let me finish my point.
Let
me finish my point because you started and I'm just finishing it for you. They're worried about that knock-on effect. The truth is, however, that throughout the years of austerity, wealth has grown in this country in the hands of a few, but the workers who have paid the price by taking pay freezes and cuts and changing their terms and conditions are now saying, you tell us the economy is doing well, it's in recovery, it's payback time for us, and that'll go viral, and that's what they're worried about. But I can tell you this, when you're on the picket lines talking to the workers at 6 a.m, they do their best to get out there in big numbers and have good strong solidarity, and it isn't just drivers, it's mechanics, it's supervisors staff, it's clerical staff, they're all there together. The discussion they're having is, what about the Apple tax? What about NAMA? What about the sell-off and the rip-off and the lack of the rich paying tax in this country? That's where the money will come from if there's a political will to pursue it.
Okay. And the problem will only be solved by talking,
right,
as the INTO and the TUI proved yesterday.
We're going to take a quick break. Back with more after this. Welcome back to the programme. A reminder of who we have with us here in studio: Finian McGrath, Minister of State; Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil spokesperson on justice; Breed Smith, People Before Profit AAA TD for Dublin South Central; and Michael O'Regan from the Irish Times. Alison O'Connor is also here from the Examiner. Now, Breed, I know that as soon as the programme is finishing at 2 o'clock, you're rushing back into town to the Right to Water March. I'm just wondering, is Jim going to go with you? Because Fianna Fáil
according to Niall Collins the other night on Vincent Brown, Fianna Fáil are all going marching against the water.
Is that right, Jim?
It's part of their S-turn, not their U-turn, their S-turn.
I have a social engagement this afternoon, but can I just say, because I suspect the topic of this conversation is going to be directed towards me.
I'll let you ask the question, Claire, rather than me coming in.
I'm just interested because I had a look and the journal.ie did a great fact check on the Fianna Fáil stance on water, and it did flip-flop quite a bit. In one day, the 11th of February, when you launched your general election manifesto, in that manifesto it says, "We will abolish Irish water and water charges." On the same day, Micheál Martin gave a speech to launch the manifesto and he said, "We will abolish Irish water and scrap water charges for the next 5 years."
Yeah.
So were you in that state of flux until last week or very recently?
No, our situation's been very consistent. If you look at our manifesto, page 36 of it says we will scrap water charges. Page 38 of it says we'll end water charges. I've copies there if you'd like them as a present.
What about the speech? We'll end them for 5 years.
When you put a manifesto out, all you can do is deal with what's going to happen for your term of government if you get in. We contested the election. We contested the election on the basis that if we were elected into government, we would abolish water charges. We didn't get elected into government. We then went into talks with Fine Gael, and there was an issue, one of the important issues we discussed with them, and there are many other issues, Michael, not simply water. One of the important issues was water. We reached an agreement with them because they were adamant that they weren't prepared to agree to abolish them. So what we agreed was that we would set up a commission, that the commission would then report to an Oireachtas committee, and then ultimately the Dáil would have the say as to whether or not water charges would be abolished. And the reason this is important, because you'll hear from Breed and you've heard from Sinn Féin about the motions they're putting down, the only way that water charges can be abolished is if legislation is introduced removing the charges. That can't be done by opposition TDs. It can only be brought in by government because it's a money bill.
So you always wanted to get rid of them?
From the manifesto is absolutely clear.
I'm just wondering why it conflicts with what Micheál Martin said on that day. For the next 5 years, scrap water charges for the next 5 years.
Well, the situation is now we are committed to ending water charges. We were committed to our manifesto. We fought the election on it. And for some reason, simply because we put a submission into the commission last week, which was publicised, people think we've done a U-turn. The position which is in the paper we delivered to the commission is completely consistent with the position we have in our manifesto. I'm really interested and surprised and excited about the fact that people are so interested in Fianna Fáil's policy positions, but our position is consistent with what we fought the election on.
I think, Jim, the reason people are so interested in your policy position is because over 90 odd of us got elected to the Dáil on one of the key issues which drove people to vote for us, which was the opposition to water, manifest Correct. By the hundreds of thousands on the street and the level of non-payment. And Fianna Fáil made a clear commitment, as they did in my constituency, that they would scrap it. Mm-hmm. And then they had the numbers to actually hold Fine Gael on this, more than the rest of us had.
But we need the legislation, Breed. We can't do it by motions.
You can't do it by motions, but what you've done is come to an agreement with the government to park it.
And set
up a commission.
They have agreed.
Most of which,
can't
by the way,
this,
Jim, most of, I didn't interrupt you, Jim, now, please.
I know, but
most
you, of you
which,
didn't get, you weren't
most
wrong.
Most of which of that commission have vested interests in various water companies throughout UK, Ireland and Britain. Now, having said that, you then say, well, we're parking it and we look at the commission, and then your submission goes in and say, no, we'll abolish it. And there are speeches from Micheál Martin which say get rid of it for 5 years. But I want to bring you right back to when water charges were mooted as part of the Troika's interference in this country. Brian Lenehan's last budget speech said there will be a water charge and we will bring it in. That was in 2008, and that is in his speech, it's in the Dáil record. There will be a water charge. It did not come out of the mouths of anybody but Fianna Fáil.
Can I respond to that?
This is not U-turns.
Just on that point,
I think it's important that you also emphasise what was in the National Recovery Plan, which was put forward by Fianna Fáil at that time, which said that we would ensure that lower income groups Remain supported. At that time in 2008, this country was at the gates of hell, as Brian Lenihan said. We are entitled to look to see what has happened since 2008. Mm. We managed to get out of that bailout. You criticised the Troika. We got through it and we've come out of it. And we are entitled now to put forward our policies for the general election in 2016. We said we would end water charges. We are putting together a mechanism to get rid of them, Breed. And it is not possible to get rid of them by just protesting. It's not possible to get rid of them by marching. And it's not possible to get rid of them by motions. The only way you can get rid of water charges is through the introduction of legislation that's passed by the Oireachtas. And we have a mechanism in place to achieve that.
There's a right to change motion coming before the Dáil next week calling for the abolition of motions. Will you support it?
No, we won't, because we have an agreed mechanism.
You vote against it.
Can we just let me speak? We have an agreed mechanism to get rid of water charges. Now, if you want to, you can have populist motions and marches. They're not going to get rid of it. The only way you change the law is by getting people elected and changing legislation.
You could at least acknowledge that you have S-turned on your policy on this several times, right back from blind. Whatever the conditions were, the Troika and the bailout and all the rest of it, you did commit to bringing in a water charge. Then you said no. Then you postponed it. And Micheál Martin talked about
will
5 years.
Will you vote against that
it.
Motion?
Yeah, we will, because we have a mechanism.
You vote against instead of abstaining.
Claire asked me a question. We have a mechanism in place to get rid of this. It involved trying to get Fine Gael to agree to a process. They have now accepted that the result, the vote of Dáil Éireann, will decide water charges. Breed knows, and she's right, majority of elected members in Dáil Éireann are committed to get rid of it. Democracy will get rid of water charges.
Okay, Michael O'Regan, can we talk real politics here? Is this about the threat from Sinn Féin?
Yes, it is. Fianna Fáil is stealing Sinn Féin's clothes on this. Now, Sinn Féin stole Paul Murphy's clothes. Sinn Féin used to decide...
Some of mine as well.
And Breed.
Jerry Adams and my skirts.
In fact, there's a lot of war robes around this in the political... There's a lot of war robes in Dáil Éireann with a lot of stolen clothes. What happened here, of course, was that Sinn Féin once support, as Fianna Fáil did, once supported water charges. Paul Murphy wins the Dublin South West by-election, where the big issue was water charges. Sinn Féin does a U-turn. So Sinn Féin will abolish water charges. Now, Fianna Fáil are watching Sinn Féin. They'll be in competition in some constituencies for the same seats. If Mary Lou MacDonald takes over the leadership, it'd be a threat, probably a bigger threat to Fianna Fáil. So Fianna Fáil decides, we'll steal Fianna Fáil's clothes in this. We'll say we'll abolish water charges. It's a political game. It's all about populism and trying to appeal to a broad section of the electorate. I find it quite astonishing, actually, that there should be so much talk about water charges at a time when the housing situation is dreadful. All you have to do is walk through central Dublin any night. Walk up Grafton Street into Stephen's Green. And the housing, the homeless situation is appalling to watch. We also know, every TD in Leinster House, cross party, independents and all that, they'll tell you there are still huge problems in the health service. And we're talking about water charges.
But you agree with Michael on that, you know, we shouldn't be talking about water charges. But that 70-day period was dominated by talk of water charges.
I was in that room. Like, people talk about what happened in Trinity as being a facade. I was in the room. Okay, I'm telling you, there was a day and a half or 2 days we discussed water charges, okay? It was a hugely controversial issue because it got such publicity. And we were adamant that we had our position and Fine Gael had their position. And there was resolution to it, and the resolution was through this mechanism, whereby Fine Gael can put forward their policy, which is they want them retained, and we can put forward our policy.
But I remember back to that time when the deal was done on water charges. The deal was done.
What does that mean?
It means that was the major stumbling block, because I remember Fianna Fáil coming out.
Water charges were left to near the end. They were a stumbling block and they were a big issue in the talks. And you're right, once water charges was dealt with, we were over all the other hurdles, okay? But that didn't mean that we didn't have other hurdles to overcome. We left it to the end. We parked it to the end because we knew it was going to be a big issue. But can I just say this? There's a mechanism now. Fine Gael eventually realised that they cannot hold back the tide of democracy. They realise that Dáil Éireann has a majority of people in it committed to get rid of the water charges. And the reason we're getting rid of them is because it's just been such an inept and incompetent method of raising money by the government. We are losing money at present as a result of the charges being imposed.
Jim has a very strong point there in relation to talks, because I was actually involved directly in the talks with Jim and with Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin at the time. And in fairness to him, 90% of the time was spent talking about health and education services, issues like that. About 10% of the time was spent talking about water. So that's the reality. reality. Michael's point there.
It's the media's fault.
Did you talk
again?
About Cerebus?
No, I'm just making the point.
Did you
here.
Talk about Cerebus?
Shoot the messenger.
Sorry.
Did you talk about Cerebus?
No, we didn't talk about Cerebus.
Okay,
no,
I thought I heard you say 90%.
No, sorry, we didn't talk about whatever I said there by accident. But the issue is here that we talked about the issues that affect the Irish people, which is housing, homelessness, education, health. These are the issues that we spend most of our time talking about.
Can I come back to Michael's point about why are we all talking about water when we've got such crisis and homelessness and all? Michael, if you want to come in with me, RTE are providing the taxi, we'll go to the march and you will see banners there from various housing campaigns in loads of local communities. You'll see banners there probably from the bus workers. You'll see banners there from students. There'll be a contingent for repeal the 8th Amendment. The water charges has been become a catalyst for the dissatisfaction and the disconnect between the government and the people.
But
and
that was why the it point, Bri, that was why you said it on the way in. Something different to it. It's not actually water charges at all. It's general discontent,
but it is water charges. And the reason people have mobilised on it is because it was something they could do something about. They could refuse to pay. They could stand over the meters and not let Irish Water install in their street. There was a way that they could interact between the state and the life that they were living and do something about it. The property tax was taken out of their wages. They couldn't do anything about that. Pay was cut. They couldn't do anything about that. But we were being asked to pay for something and we could say, no, we're not paying.
There is no doubt that the last government made the greatest hames ever of the introduction of water charges. That even for people like myself who were quite happy to pay for water and quite happy to do so on the grounds of conservation ended up in the end nearly being embarrassed admitting to that. That's how badly they handled it. But that does not take from the way Fianna Fáil, I see this as classic Fianna Fáil, sort of all four coat and no knickers in terms of it's following Sinn Féin and what they're at, trying to be more clever than Fine Gael, which they are, when it comes to politics and getting themselves ahead. I think even the fact that they're at this now and the budget negotiations are coming up and that they're going to try and have Fine Gael on the back foot, you know, they're clever at this sort of thing. But it's very short-termist policy, really. It doesn't help at the situation we're at the moment, where we have a very delicate government situation. And I think if Fianna Fáil were at all concerned, you know, about the overall good of the country and the notion of allowing this government bed down for a while and passing this budget, they wouldn't be being so opportunist.
We're trying to focus on issues that affect people's lives. A lot of the issues that Breed mentioned there, we're trying to fix the years of austerity, and that's what the independent
Why don't we take the tax?
Can I just make a point?
If it came out last week
in the Irish Times that the Fianna Fáil submission to the Commission on Water had stated that we're in favour of suspending water charges or having a waiver for certain people, I would be in here today and you would rightly be criticising me, saying, Jim O'Callaghan, look at page 36 of your manifesto. It says you'd scrap water charges and it says the same on page 38. We're just simply sticking to our manifesto commitment, and I don't think we should be criticised for that. We were criticised for not going into government with Fine Gael, even though we gave that commitment
beforehand. Come on, Jim, you just quoted to me where when Lenehan mooted the notion of water charges, you then put on an addition to say that you would protect the most vulnerable and the low paid.
Can I ask a quick question?
We will scrap
water charges. That was our manifesto commitment.
Jim,
can
I ask you a
really
quick question on behalf of listeners out there who pay their charges, right? Do they get their money back?
There has to be equality of treatment. And that means...
So what happens?
I'll tell you what it means. It means one of two things. Either they get their money back and they're refunded, or in the alternative, the people who haven't paid and whose bills are still lawfully due, they have to be chased after so that they do pay. So it's one or the other, and there has to be equality of treatment between all.
Do you agree with that, Finian?
I think it's important, that everybody's treated with equality in relation to
water charges coming back, actually?
First of all, I'm waiting for the Commission to come back and see what their decision is. And
I just want to know what
decision.
You think. I just want to know what you think.
I think myself that...
He's not allowed to think.
No. Hold on a second now. Independents make decisions and think very clearly, and we make impartial decisions. My own personal position is there was huge concerns about the setup of Irish Water. There's also concerns about public ownerships, which I have those concerns. Mm. But I do support the right to people to have a certain amount of free water.
Finian and I pay
people
that.
What about the European Commission?
Let's get clarity in this particular issue, right? So what I'm saying to people is we should just cool down for a while, let the commission come back, and then the Dáil will decide and vote on the particular
issue.
That's
think?
The democratic way. I would like to see the views of the commission first before I make a final decision.
You're not going to get
an
answer.
We're not going to get an answer. Let's take a break. Back with more after this. We were just having a chat here about what we talk about for the last 8 minutes or so. We're sort of having a vote on it. We've decided to spend a couple of minutes on NAMA, and just reading all of the coverage today and the analysis, I just wondered whether we ever expected not to have an inquiry into this massive project that was set up by the state. You know, the biggest ever property company. Did we ever expect that we wouldn't look back on it and examine all of the transactions that it did?
Well, and I remember at the time it was set up, Claire, I remember writing an article for a paper, Socialist Worker, and using the analogy, it was like putting the foxes in charge of the hen house. Somebody gave it to me, I stole it from them. But that's exactly what it was.
But regardless of who you would put in charge, with a project that size, did we ever think we wouldn't be looking back on it and examining the transactions that it did?
That was the point, that you were letting sort of vultures in on a situation where they could just scoop up and do what they liked. And I think Mick Wallace's article in the Times today is very interesting, because he points out early on in the article that yes, this investigation in the north is crucial and it's important and it goes to the heart of it, but there are dozens of other investigations that need to take place in dozens of other transactions and portfolios. And I think that is correct, that this remit needs to be widened, and in between now and whenever we get to the bottom of this, there should be no more sales from NAMA of our property, because people keep arguing,
you
can't interfere in private commercial transactions. This is our property. The people paid for it. The people bailed out the banks.
I think we need to keep perspective. NAMA was really controversial when it was set up in 2009. It cost the state $30 billion. In fairness to it, to date, it has got back for the state $24.6 billion. In 2 years' time, the $30 billion would have been repaid. Now, if you look back to 2009, nobody thought that would happen. So in broad terms, it's a success. It's been a really bad week for NAMA. It suffered bad reputational damage. The Comptroller and Auditor General is a constitutional office holder, and his report is meriting serious consideration. However, there's a consensus now there should be an inquiry. But we've got to be careful. I've seen so many times when politicians get together, they say, we want a big, broad inquiry. They kick it off to some poor, unfortunate judge.
If we are there any left?
That's not what's been asked.
Okay, can I just say this to you? I'm just conscious. If we have very broad terms, you're going to have an endless inquiry that's going to cost us hundreds of millions. We need a tight, focused inquiry. But before we get there, we need to learn from our mistakes in terms of IBRC. We need to amend the legislation so that the inquiry can look at NAMA documents, because they're confidential. And secondly, we need to do it on a modular basis so that we don't send off an inquiry out to Jupiter.
I'd agree with that. That the Independence Alliance were one of the first people at Cabinet to push for a commission of inquiry, because there is a huge amount of lack of public trust there, and it's crucial for me as well, because we need to restore the trust on those particular aspects too.
Voted against Mick Wallace's bill to open up an inquiry into the Cerebus project.
At the Cabinet level, a push for
as
a commission of investigation.
As did Fianna Fáil, having promised
Shane
him that they would back
pushed
it.
That very,
you
very
voted
strongly.
Against it.
That's absolute. The facts are, we were the ones that pushed for
the
investigation.
But it wasn't until Fianna Fáil said they wanted an inquiry. Is that not it?
We welcome support, but the bottom line is we made the running on it.
There are two things we don't need. One is a broad inquiry that will run forever and cost millions. The other thing is we don't need an Oireachtas committee looking at it.
Nobody's asked for either of those. What we do need is an independent, thorough investigation into the entire operations of NAMA.
It will take 15 years.
Nobody would win out of that. There would be no answers. It would go on so long and be so, you know,
lawyers
utterly useless. As Jim
lawyers
says, lawyers
are public.
I sat in this very studio on the budget day that NAMA was announced. Michael might assist me with what he, I don't know what. I mean, it was in the middle of the, we hadn't an arse in our trousers. That's didn't know whether the state would be able to pay the wages the following month to all the people that it employs. So I think, as Jim said, we have to remember that NAMA has actually done a tremendous job.
Because
however, It has had a disastrous week. It has, you know, it has done itself no favours in the last couple of days. And there are certainly questions in all of this. You could almost make a movie out of what is, if you've read a very good piece in the Irish Times by Peter Murta today on it. And it's full of intrigue. It's full of lots of questions that do need to be answered, but I think in a very specific, concentrated way. Otherwise, we'll be here in 10 years' time,
Alison,
without answers.
My point is not that Cerebus and what happened in the north shouldn't be investigated. It is being investigated, ironically, in three jurisdictions as a criminal investigation by the FBI, by MI5 and by the PSNI, but not by the Gardaí, ironically enough. However, my point is not that we shouldn't have an investigation into what happened at Cerebus in the north, but we should look at other worrying portfolios and what happened with them. Because NAMA, by its structure and by its very nature of having set up tax breaks and loopholes for all sorts of REITs, is open to massive questions on how
we're
offloaded.
We're out of time, unfortunately. Thank you very much for coming in. And Breed and perhaps Jim are sharing a taxi now into the right water.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Jim is cycling. He's going to take Breed on the bike.
I'm on my bike. I'll put you on the back carrier, Breed.
Thank you all very much for coming in. Finian McGrath, Jim O'Callaghan, Breed Smith, Michael O'Regan and Alison O'Connor. I'll talk to you on Monday night. We're on the television at 10:35. Hope you can join me then. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.